Hello and welcome to the Muni Lowdown. My name is Paul Graves and I'm the managing editor for DebtWire Municipals. This episode is titled, The New Math of Las Vegas. I'm joined today by my co-host, Kunal Kamal, and our guest, Andrew Woods, director of the Center for Business and Economic Research at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Yes, UNLV, home of the Running Rebels, Talk the Shark, and the Thomas and Mack Center, affectionately known to fans as the Shark Tank. Andrew, great to have you here.
Paul and Kunal, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be on.
So before we dig into the numbers, can you give listeners a quick sense of the center's work, not just in Las Vegas, but across the broader regional and national projects your team takes on?
Sure. The Center for Business and Economic Research here in Las Vegas has been around for 50 years. We are a part of an association of other centers nestled in business schools across the country. We do a variety of work on behalf of the public, business, and nonprofit. The primary mission is to take the tools, theory, and data science behind economics and apply it to the public. Particularly, we focus on Nevada, but we certainly, because Nevada is heavily dependent on discretionary spending and visitations, and we have a very large leisure and hospitality industry, we have to pay close attention to the national economy, the regional economy, and sometimes even the global economy so we can get a better sense of what's going on. But we also get involved in all sorts of projects in economic development and labor force. We've even done things like monitoring the desert tortoise population in southern Nevada. We've done a variety of work on everything from healthcare to national defense to, as I just mentioned, tortoises. So it's a fun job and a really close-knit team, but we get involved in all sorts of things and care greatly about how well the state of Nevada is doing and, just as importantly, Las Vegas is doing.
So one big picture question before we get into Las Vegas. We had talked a little bit offline about automation and some of the things you're seeing around that. And obviously everybody's concerned, maybe not necessarily about automation, but AI. Is AI going to take my job? What are you guys noticing around automation?
Let me put this in perspective. One in four jobs in Las Vegas are tied to leisure and hospitality. One in $3 of GDP generated in Southern Nevada, which is 75% of the population, is generated out of leisure and hospitality. And half the state budget is influenced by the spending of visitors. We have about 40 million visitors just here in Southern Nevada, about 52 million visitors statewide that come to our wonderful state and enjoy it. But we've been monitoring, say, employment in leisure hospitality industry since the early 90s. Back then, every hotel room, which we have well over 200,000, every hotel room would employ two people. Today, it employs less than one person. You could say that's gains in efficiency, productivity, and then to some extent, automation, also changing consumer habits. Since COVID, for example, people don't necessarily have their room or need to have their room cleaned every single day. So that means a little bit less workforce. But at the same time, we also see with AI recently, they're needing less data scientists and they're needing less people to do analytics on price strategy, maybe a little bit less of consulting services. When we talk to the hotels and casinos, our large employers, they are saying they're using more and more, they were already using analytics, but using more, quote, AI to be more efficient in terms of their pricing strategies, how they're maximizing filling their hotel rooms. Because you think about every night in Vegas, they need to figure out a way to keep the building full. And that is a lot of that is based on pricing, but also then getting people in the door for a variety of reasons, entertainment shows, sports, etc. So they say they're using it quite a bit. In our forecasts, which we've been doing for 30 years now for population and employment and demographic purposes, we do see that leisure and hospitality will continue to grow in the state, but it is not growing at anywhere near this rates it was, say, before the Great Recession. So growth is slowing from an employment standpoint, because I think some of this is more efficiency and productivity is tied to this as well.
I have another follow-up question, because you used the word efficiency a couple of times, and we had this conversation offline as well about how Nevada taxes and how you were saying to me that Nevada does a great job at taxing efficiently. Andrew, what does that mean, that Nevada taxes efficiently?
I specifically mean around leisure and hospitality. So because it is our competitive advantage in the marketplace, in our regional competitive advantage, we have over many decades built a system that, compared to other regions, because it is, again, such a huge employment base, That is where half the state budget is influenced by is travel and leisure spending. We get on average about 40 million visitors, as I mentioned prior, here in Las Vegas alone, about 52 million across the state. We have to find a way to pay for our education system, our roads, all of Medicaid, other things that the state is responsible for. A lot of that is dependent on how well our travel and tourism industry is doing, how gaming is doing, so gambling. And so I would argue when we talk about that specific niche, we are very efficient because we've designed a system that taxes on sales tax, so consumption, it taxes on hotels in a certain way, it taxes on entertainment. It taxes on travel, so it's built in a way that it's supposed to be self-supporting, where we upkeep the Strip and make it continue to make it competitive. But the Las Vegas Strip, so the 4 miles that people know and love and on TV or come in and visit, but also it then supports the state's ecosystem and the state budget and the general fund. There are other things we could talk about that you probably don't want to get into about more for the 3.1 million residents and taxation there, which is different. But in terms of leisure and hospitality, I would make that argument that we've built an efficient system to tax and support and sustain it.
So Las Vegas has seen 13 straight months of declining visitor numbers. Gaming revenue reached a record in 2025 and convention activity stayed steady. What do these conflicting metrics tell us about the underlying health of the Las Vegas economy?
I would argue, Paul, it's not just the Las Vegas economy, it's the national economy and where we are right now. So I would say that consumers for years now, the consumer sentiment has been in the, say, the bottom of the tank. It's been abysmal. And yet they continue to spend from a headline standpoint. Last year, consumers started doing what they said, which is they started putting their dollars where they thought they could maximize value, given that their budgets have been stretched. We've had sticky inflation for several years now, but the job market is not as strong as it was in the past. And you have a lot of uncertainty in the economy. And Vegas, unfortunately, got the brunt of those effects because we had a pricing strategy, did very well after the pandemic when demand was high and people were willing to pay for higher priced hotel rooms and entertainment and, unfortunately, $15 bottle of water in some cases, or $50 parking, but they were willing to pay it. Consumers, especially in the middle and the lower tiers last year, said enough is enough. And we struggled over the summer. We had a summer slump. It evened out a bit in the fall. And our resorts are very smart and savvy. They've got very smart people over there. They've got AI and these other things. And they saw that. And you saw that they rebranded. They got new sales campaign. And they are working out their pricing models to show that they have value for consumers off the middle and lower end of the tier. But again, just like the national economy, the upper income, so top 10% or however we want to slice that pie, seems to be doing well, still coming to Vegas. If you look at the stock price for Wynn Resorts, it did very well in 2025. And that caters to the higher income bracket. The Bellagio has been full and busy, another higher income property. Those have done very well. If you look at the number of private jets flying into Vegas, it's remained steady through 2024 and 2025, while as budget airlines have struggled. And that's not just a Vegas thing, that's nationally. And if you look at our competition, so Vegas, we're not the only game in town, right? People can go to San Diego, they can go to Hawaii, they can go to Disneyland, they can go to Florida and go to Disney World. Those actually on the domestic visitation front did well or did okay last year. We had about a 7.8% decline in visitors, total visitors. And just like what we're seeing nationally, businesses seem to be doing fine too, because convention travel to Vegas was on par roughly with where it was the year prior. And then with international visitors, if you're talking about Canadians, yes, they're very upset given the political situation that none of us can control, but their visitations were down 20%. We saw the same thing in numbers in Hawaii and Florida. But if you look at other segments like Europe and Asia, those were up. The more travelers from those places came to Vegas last year than the year prior. And you have more direct flights from both those places added to Harry Reid International Airport. To me, symbolizing that a weaker dollar, still strong international support minus the Canadians, which is unfortunate because they are our largest segment and we care a lot about them coming and enjoying Canada. I'll tell your listeners this story. This is obviously a very fun interview, but I actually had a lot of fun calling into AM radio up in Canada last year. where they would put me on during the traffic report or whatever during the commute, and they would want to rib, you know, Vegas and the U.S. for being so mean to the Canadians, but saying like, hey, we miss you. We really want to come back. We love the Sphere. We love coming down there for all the entertainment and food, but you guys are so mean to us and yada, yada, yada. And I'd have to go back and forth with them on these in live broadcast. And then they, of course, throw out something like Nashville's better. And I'd be like, yeah, does the Nashville have the Sphere? Does it have Allegiant Stadium? Anyway.
Right. Yeah, this is not a gotcha podcast, but I do have a connected question. In New York City, they're planning to build 3 casinos. Detroit casinos, Chicago casinos. Do any of these casinos, when they're built, does it have any effect on Vegas, or are these just, there's no connection at all? Because it's something I just wonder about, because it seems like there's a lot of places building casinos.
It's not the first time Vegas has faced competition. So you have Atlantic City back in the 80s was big competition. We've had tribal, which has been competition. You have international. Certainly we've seen the proliferation of domestic gaming and still growth in tribal gaming. What's interesting on the strip now, you have at least 3 tribes that own or operate properties here because they invested in their resorts elsewhere, like Seminoles in Florida, but now they bought the Hard Rock, or they're rebranded as the Hard Rock, but it was the Mirage here in Las Vegas. I guess Vegas, as long as we are staying one step ahead in terms of what's unique here that you can't get anywhere else, as well as the agglomeration of it. And they're building one resort. We have not only many resorts, we have Area 15, which is a very unique experience that certain consumer segments really love to go to. Like, your listeners can't see us, but you're wearing a Grateful Dead t-shirt. Area 15 might be a popular place for certain deadheads, right? So there's just different things that we have that nowhere else has that makes it very popular. That I would say continues to make us competitive, because you can do it all here in a 4-mile square radius. Plus, you can have world-class food, world-class entertainment. You can catch a Raiders game, or soon you'll be able to catch a baseball game with the A's, and you won't have to drive miles out into the suburbs to do any of that. And what's also people don't know about Vegas is, let's say that gambling is not your thing, feeding your hedonistic love for and gluttony for steak and big burgers and things is not your thing. That's fine too. We have great outdoor recreation. We have mountain biking. We have kayaking. You can go up in the mountains, and we have things like spa and swimming. Vegas is a little bit of everything, or a little bit of something to everyone. It's not just one thing. And I think that's where we've moved beyond what we've all associated with Nevada or Las Vegas, right? Some of that, what happens here stays here. There's also what happens here influences the world and what everyone wants, right? There's always a little bit of something that everyone wants here in Nevada.
So, Andrew, I hope your Vegas pitch attracts some of the Canadians back. But in the meantime, I just wanted to understand, but there's still some conflicting numbers. Visitor numbers have been steadily down, but gaming numbers have been at least more volatile and in a longer sense, seem more stable. Some of the segments seem to be still doing well. How do you explain this divergence, and what does it say about visitor and shifting patterns among the demographics?
Great question. So one thing to keep in mind that we write about and talk about is when we look at gaming numbers, because from a nominal standpoint or a headline standpoint, they have been, quote, record setting, but they're not adjusted for inflation. And so we are inflation adjusting our tax numbers and our gaming numbers and other top line indicators from a revenue standpoint for the state or for gaming, because if you look at, for example, gaming numbers, when you inflation adjust them, they're the same as they were in 2019. So even though from a headline standpoint, they are, quote, record setting, they are not that when you inflation adjust them. And we're using the same inflation adjustment as the BLS and the BEA use. So we're not doing anything crazy here. We're just adjusting it to see what it's actually in real dollars. And the purchasing power because of inflation is the same from gaming. There is a very solid core demographic that loves gambling, and they love coming to Vegas for the real thing and for the full effect, the International World Series of Poker and all these things. And it does very well in Las Vegas. But that's still just one segment. You have these other segments that come to Vegas for entertainment, and we still fill up on the weekends when we have large events. For example, we've got WrestleMania coming up. We have 4 nights of BTS, which if you're not a K-pop fan, you have no idea what I'm talking about. But if you are a K-pop fan, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Even with World Cup, even though there's not a match being played in Vegas, Just like Super Bowl and other major sporting events, we get seen as a secondary city for people to come to who can't or won't go to an actual match, but they can still come and watch matches in a very lively and comfortable and fun setting that they can do that. And we see on weekends that does very well. Where we're struggling is the midweek when there's not a big convention in town. And summer is, again, that area where in the past the pool parties and the DJs would be able to attract people. But there has been a lot of frustration expressed, and I think rightly so, about the pricing strategy and what value people feel like they're getting. And that's been a real struggle for the Strip in the last year. Well, I was an economist. I wouldn't say it necessarily came out of nowhere, but certainly for our operators, it felt like it. I think it felt like that for them came out of nowhere because they were at first a little slow to acknowledge and adjust. But I think now they have to adjust to stay competitive in the business environment. But we'll see with this summer, right? We're forecasting 40 million visitors for the Las Vegas Strip, so in line with the longer run average, but still shy of our record of 42.7, which came in 2016. It's still shy of the Super Bowl year when we hosted Super Bowl, which was around 41.7 roughly visitors that came and was a very big year for us. Now, on average, people are spending more. But again, you got to adjust that for inflation and make sure those numbers actually work out in terms of real dollars and not just nominal dollars.
So, Andrew, in your forecast, you suggest that Las Vegas, the tourist numbers will stay roughly around 39 to 40 million over the next couple of years at least. What are the factors that are keeping these numbers from growing meaningfully beyond that level?
Great question. There's a couple of things, short-term and long-term. Short-term, we do think there will be benefits from the tax breaks in the Big Beautiful Bill, and we will see what that looks like here in the spring. Of course, now we're closely monitoring energy prices and particularly gasoline prices because a third of our visitors come in from Southern California and they drive along the I-15. So we're paying attention to that because in the past, that has a correlation on visitor volume to Southern Nevada, how much it costs to drive here. We're also watching real wages, and they have been positive. So wages are outpacing inflation across the board. But when you dig in by industry, it's a lot more nuanced. And in Southern Nevada, among our workforce, it took a lot longer for real wages to turn positive. So those are the things in the short run I'm really looking at. In the longer run, and let me just preface this, Kunal, saying I'm an economist, so I'm always worried, and I'm always going to give you a two-sided answer. So one is we don't see beyond the current projects that are being built in Las Vegas on the Strip, so the Hard Rock with the Mirage and the A.C. Stadium, there hasn't been any significant announcements about other billion-dollar-plus projects. And so while these projects will be completed by 2028, if in same bright line, the high speed rail is, you know, 2029, there is a question, what's behind that? In Vegas, we do depend on growth for growth's sake. So what are the other big endeavors happening that would give a signal of confidence long term that there's constant renewal and reinvestment in the gaming and hospitality, leisure and hospitality industry here? So that keeps me saying maybe we're up 39 to 40 million when I'm modeling this. So it's not just me making this out of thin air, and I get other opinions on this. We have a committee that picks apart our assumptions and our model, but we're also looking at that the U.S. economy seems to be at a place where we're getting very strong headline growth, but when you dig in, wages and jobs are not growing the way you would think in a very healthy part of the business cycle, as the headline number suggests where we are. Instead, that 70% of all job creation in the United States is coming from healthcare. And we know that with demographics, you have an aging population, which we see here in Nevada, though we're still slightly younger from a median standpoint than the U.S. average. But we've had a lot of retirees that move here. We know that healthcare is a little bit more immune to the business cycle, but it's not necessarily the most productive industry, right? Like information technology and AI and all those things are, and same in manufacturing. So it gives me pause about where that growth is headed and whether consumers in the future are going to continue to spend the way they are, if, say, more of their income is being eaten up by healthcare, if the job availability is not the same as it was coming out of the pandemic. We see, instead of a demographic dividend, we see more of a demographic crunch coming because you have the aging population and for the time being, you have very sharp reversal in immigration. And so Vegas is very dependent on a workforce that is not necessarily always college educated, that requires people still, even with robotics and AI. So where are you going to get the people to work in some of these facilities and train them and make sure that they are have the right skills and qualifications? So there's a lot of things that give us pause in the long run about how would Vegas hit 45 million visitors or 50 million visitors. Don't get me wrong. There are people who have much more decision and say in this than I do, thinking about this problem and how we invest in it. But I don't see any kind of long-term kind of action happening right now that would say we could hit those numbers. One of the things too Vegas is struggling with when we were hitting really strong numbers out of COVID is our infrastructure, such as the airport and then to get from the airport to the strip and back. And then for workers, we have close to 400,000 people who work just in 4 miles there on the Las Vegas Strip. They have to go to work on a daily basis sometimes. And so how do we get them efficiently back and forth? And we have a growing population. So we're at 2.4 million. Our forecast right now calls for 3.1 million by 2040. So you're packing in another 600,000 to 700,000 people in the next 20 years. So where are they going to live? How are they going to commute? Those add structural issues to how our growth may or may not look over the next 10, 15, 20 years. And so that just being cautious and conservative right now, again, we don't have a dog in the fight as the university. We obviously want to see Vegas succeed, but we're not here to promote any one brand or operator. Just we're being conservative in how we view things going forward. And we do see that there are going to be some struggles for the community where we probably need to think about how do we invest in ourselves further to ramp up that growth and those productivity economists. We love productivity because that's how we measure growth and wages and how efficiently the economy is moving ahead. I think there's some structural issues that we're going to have to work on, and we're having those conversations now, but it's going to be challenging because in the past, you think about historically how Vegas and Nevada was structured and built. I'm not going to give you a whole history lesson, so just bear with me for 30 seconds. It was mining interests that really got the state started during the Civil War. Abraham Lincoln needed to pay for the war. Guess what's a lot in Nevada? Gold and silver. And that's written in our state constitution. Later on, we had gambling because of the Great Depression. It was a way to balance the budget. And turns out that turned out to be a very successful run. But we're entering a stage where growth isn't quite growing at the same rates that the state is used to and what's been built on. And we used to count on these visionaries that would come in, and maybe we're still attracting those visionaries. If you do think about the visionaries that really helped Vegas develop into what it is today, from Steve Wynn to Kirk Kerkorian to Sheldon Adelson and many others, now it's a lot more corporate control. Nothing wrong with that. It's Wall Street, right? They do a good job making sure businesses are productive and efficient, but at the same time, they're a little less adverse to risk and saying, yes, go ahead and build a $4 billion casino. And let's see if this new concept works, right? And that's what Vegas has thrived on, is risk-taking and risk-seekers that have deep pockets. But right now, it seems like I'm waiting for who's going to step up to the plate and be that next person to make that investment.
Andrew and Kunal, thank you both so much for a very thoughtful and engaging discussion on Las Vegas economics. To our audience, I hope you found this podcast to be informative. Please support us by liking, sharing, and or subscribing to Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Until the next time, thanks for joining us on the Muni Lowdown.